go, Muniz. He's done it again. Oh, what a lovely goal. And I'm delighted for Sasha Lukic. It's his first goal for the club, and he'll love that. The Hammersmith Enders are on their feet. It's Muniz again. Oliver, 3-0 ahead.
Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under. Here again after the international break to discuss the upcoming game against Sheffield United. A big game in the scheme of things as Fulham can finally move into the top half of the Premier League. Here to talk it all through, as always, we have Elton. How are we going?
Good evening and hello everyone. And hello to Skibby on the road. Which some of you, if you're following on the live, you can see. He's very, you're quite well dressed for tonight, Skibby. So thanks for making the effort.
I'm in my business attire. I mean, for the people listening, it's not quite shirt and tie, but you know, it's 2024's type business attire. But yeah, on the road, I haven't been kicked out of the house. It's just, you know, how work life comes and meets your football life. That's all it's all that's happening, really.
I can see a duvet on the back seat. What are you talking about?
That's it. And I've got a little swindle. All my belongings.
Well, you stole my intro for Skibby there, but thanks for joining us today, Skibby. On the road, as Elton said.
No worries. Good
to have you join us to talk about Sheffield.
Pleasure to be here. And yeah, looking forward to it.
So, guys, jump straight into it. Sheffield United this weekend, bottom of the Premier League. I don't know if you guys saw an article by The Athletic this week where they basically rated every team season. Sheffield United got an F, Burnley got an E, Fulham got an A-. It's not the kind of season you'd hope for as a promoted side. In fact, it's quite the opposite. They're currently sitting on 14 points from 28 games, 8 points adrift of Luton, who everyone thought would be sitting rock bottom. Skibby, I'll throw to you first. You were actually a guest on a Sheffield podcast earlier this week. How do you see this panning out? Because Sheffield United, you'd have to say, are kind of almost destined to be relegated already.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to Chad and the Red Side of Sheffield who took me on their podcast and we had a good chat. So if it's been released, I'm not sure. But yeah, go and give me a good listen. It was a really good insight. It was quite harsh in a way. It was just, I mean, he was so pessimistic. I think he even began the podcast saying, you know, only like nine after this one, only 9 more games to go, and we can finally go back to the Championship and enjoy the football again. Yeah. So it was quite doom and gloom, and I feel like that's probably quite the feel around Sheffield United as a whole. I mean, you look at where they are in the league, the form table, everything just doesn't really add up to anything where you can be slightly optimistic for them. I mean, the only thing you can potentially talk about is, you know, Forest getting a points deduction. They're now appealing, which means it could go either way again. Everton as well, they're up against it. So it's kind of like those glimmer of hope. And I think even Chad was saying he hates those glimmers of hope. He hates the... You know, he just wants it done and dusted, relegated, and just call it a day. And I think as Fulham fans, we've all been there. We all know how that felt. I remember when under Scott Parker, you know, we had that 1-0 win at Anfield, and you're thinking, you know what, this is going to turn our season. We're going to carry on, and it just doesn't happen. Let's be honest. You just want that kind of cemented feeling. But I mean, for the game itself, you can only look at it one way. We love scoring goals. Okay, at home we love scoring goals, away not so much. But it's just one of those where you just feel like a fit Fulham with a full squad shouldn't really have any trouble against a really diminishing the morale around the squad. Must be awful at Sheffield United. So you can only see it going one way. But that being said, we seem to be very much like Robin Hood at the moment. You know, I'm not going to call Wolves the poor. I mean, they are slightly higher than us in the table, but they had a lot of injuries. We should have, on paper, we had the stronger squad. we should have been 3-0 up at half time, and then we ended up losing the game. So that's what I said to them on the podcast. I said that, you know, if you can keep Fulham quiet for, you know, the first half and go in at 0-0 or snatch a goal or somehow from a set piece or something, then, you know, we've got this kind of fragile mentality, which we've seen a lot this season, and our away form is pretty awful. We've got, I think, 2 wins from 14 games, and only one of them was Everton, the first game of the season, and then, you know, the Manchester United at Old Trafford. So it's a very mixed bag when Fulham are playing away, and that's, I can't not see us winning, but there's always that kind of something chipping in the back of my mind saying it's just so Fulhamish to go to Sheffield United and lose.
It's so true. Ooh. And the form table you're talking about, just pulled it up, away from home, Fulham actually sit in the relegation zone, picked up only 10 points from our 14 games. Sheffield United have picked up 6 points from their 14 games. So there's not actually a huge differential between us. I mean, it's Fulham, Burnley, Sheffield United in the bottom three for away form. Burnley have picked up 1 point less than us, but they scored the same number of goals, conceded 1 goal less than we have. It's pretty dire reading when you look at that. But Dad, let's be perfectly honest here. Going to Sheffield United in the position they're in, even if it is away from home, this should be a win for Fulham, and we shouldn't really be expecting or accepting anything else.
Absolutely not. And I think it's normal and typical to kind of analyse home and away form. There's absolutely a home crowd advantage. But I would have thought at this level, you'd think that quality actually outs, and a significantly better team should be able to travel, should be able to do it in a stadium with no people, or 40,000 people of away fans or opponents' fans screaming their lungs out. But if you're better than the other guys, you should be able to do it on paper, in theory. But it's amazing how much of a factor it seems to be. Our form in the last month has really been exciting. There's an intensity about us. We're scoring a lot of goals. Mooney's, as a single person, is actually very much delivering the business, but other people are chipping in as well. So it would be a really dramatic turnaround in form, or drop off in form, quite sudden, really, if we screwed this up. But I think you're right, Skibby, that we're so vulnerable to going a goal down in the first half, where we don't, if our away form isn't great, our record of coming back from being 1-0 down, possibly even worse. I don't know the stats on that, but I bet it is home or away. So, look, I can't see this being a failure for us, but no, I'm going to say it's not going to be a failure. I think those days are behind us. How about that?
Well, I mean, I'd hope so. And it's a similar conversation we have when we talk about getting results against the big six sides. You know, we talked about it last season, at least, where we just said the one thing missing is those sort of glory results against those big teams. And this season we have seen that turn around. I think we have still slipped up a few times. I'm thinking Burnley, I'm thinking Bournemouth, games where we should have got results. And even looking at the game against Luton, who admittedly aren't a pushover, but we probably shouldn't have made it as hard as we did. This is one of those potential banana peel games where anything could go wrong, but I just feel like this Sheffield United side is so poor that we shouldn't be expecting anything but a win from this game.
No.
A handful of injuries from them at the moment might make a bit of a difference for us, but yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say, Skib?
No, I was just going to say, I think you're kind of spot on that you can't really see anything else. I think the only thing that's kind of giving me a little the reason for the voice in the back of my mind, I think, is after speaking to Kish from Cottage Tactico. And if you haven't seen that or heard it, go check it out because it's amazing. But it was more around Fulham were really good on the front foot, and we saw that tactically, but it's breaking teams down. And when a team sits in front of us and is going to defend and kind of shut up shop and not basically setting out not to lose, that's where we struggle. And that's what's kind of given me that little voice now, is just, yes, Sheffield United are going to come out. I know they're in a really bad position where they probably need to look at this as a win, but I think they're going to see this as a kind of keep Fulham out for the first half. And then they can start to sort of be more adventurous. But this is where it's going to be a challenge for us, is can we break them down, and can we sort of get behind, which we really do struggle with, to sort of take the game by the scruff of the neck, as it were.
It's a big question, and I guess one thing sort of sitting in the back of my mind as well on top of that is, what are Sheffield United playing for now at this point in the season? You know, there's not a huge number of games to go. What are we at less than 10 games to go now. The only way Sheffield United can stay up is by winning pretty much at least 50% of their games before the end of the season. They've got 10 games to go. They need to pick up at least 15 points, probably win 7 or 8 of those games. They can't really afford to sit back and just draw games from this point onwards, or even chance it and go into sit behind the ball, go into halftime at 0-0, and then cross their fingers and hope that they can get a result in the second half. The only way forward for them is to be attacking and expansive. And you do see sometimes the weight get lifted off sides like that, because they kind of have nothing to lose, and maybe they'll play in a slightly different way than we're expecting because of that. And that does open the door for us a little bit, because we do like to play that sort of counter-attacking, swift-attacking style. I think there will be goals in this one. I know we haven't scored many away from home this season, but, you know, Sheffield in 28 games have a goal difference of minus 50. They've only scored, they're scoring less than goal a game. We're scoring almost 2 goals a game so far this season, and they're conceding on average almost 3 goals per game. So it's pretty dire numbers for them, and their defence has looked pretty leaky throughout the whole season. They have started to get a little bit more expansive in the last few games, a 2-2 with Bournemouth. In fact, let me just jump over to the slide that shows their current form. It's a 2-2 with Bournemouth, but then, you know, 6-0 against Arsenal, a slightly closer 1-0 against Wolves away from home, then a 5-0 loss to Brighton, but a 3-1 win against Luton. And I don't know if you guys saw any of that game or any of the highlights from that game, but they were a lot more expansive in that game, and they did push forward and maybe a little bit more expressive and trying some different things. You see the flip side of that in their big losses against Arsenal and Brighton, but in the sides that are maybe more around their level, talking Bournemouth, Luton, and maybe Wolves as well in some aspects, the games are a little bit closer, and they're actually starting to score some goals. I'm just hoping that Fulham can be on the same level that Brighton and Arsenal were when they played against Sheffield.
Well, maybe it's a matter of how they perceive Fulham and how much of a threat they actually perceive. Because if I don't for a moment think that they won't be pretty fearful of Mooney's and, you know, our wingers as to what they could do to them. So I can't imagine that they're going to view us like a Luton, who are maybe a peer and someone they have to go after. I mean, what's the point of being in the Premier League if they can't take Luton on, right? But I can't see them, you know, the shackles coming off and them really being confident about the likelihood of a win and an easy open game against Fulham. I can't see it.
No, I think you're right. It's a tough one, because when the shackles come off and there isn't much to play for, I mean, I know it's not mathematically certain that they are relegated, but I mean, it's more or less they're too far adrift for me. And I think the players may know that as well. And I think once that pressure is lifted of, well, we've got nothing else to play for, we may as well take a few scalps as we go down. Like, you know, we may have had an awful season, but, you know, remember that game against Fulham at home where, you know, we actually took the game to them. It's kind of like just playing for pride now. And that is dangerous. But again, am I giving them too much credit for their character? Are they that kind of mentally strong? I don't know. I mean, judging by the 6-0s, the 5-0s, you just sense that maybe not. They're just maybe too far gone and almost, you know, on the beach already kind of thing, you know. But, I mean, the Luton game was impressive. It was a different Sheffield United that we've seen. But then you've got the stark contrast of Arsenal. Yes, okay, Arsenal were a very good team, and potentially one of the favourites for the Champions League this year and looking at the title. But I think they were 5-0 down after like 20 minutes.
30 minutes, I think, yeah.
Yeah, it was just absolute dire defending. And it wasn't even like a... One, they didn't seem to have a game plan. And two, it was like, you know, they just weren't even doing the basics right. And that just sort of screams the sort of character or the mentality that they currently have, which makes me think that, you know, Fulham on their day with the right kind of mindset of we're going to take the game to them like Arsenal did, then yeah, I can absolutely see a 4-5-0. But, you know, it at the end of the day, it's also Fulham. So we've seen this before where, you know, we should have been 3-0 up. We should have, would have, could have is that one of the famous things for Fulham at the moment. So I think if we can get the right mindset of Muniz firing and the right attacking intent, I think we can take the game to them and walk away comfortably as we should. When I spoke to the Red Side of Sheffield, they asked me who was my player to watch out for from a Fulham perspective. And honestly, I think Alex Iwobi was my choice just because he just seems to be doing everything at the moment. And yeah, it's fair enough. You could say Muniz or Pereira for just the set pieces, but I just really feel that the intensity that Fulham come with, Iwobi is going to be that man that can unlock doors. And I just think that as long as Iwobi is having a solid game, then I think that we should be absolutely fine.
Yeah, I think he's been a fair comment, I think.
Yeah, Iwobi's been really impressive recently. And I think against a side like Sheffield, where there is that sort of gap in quality, Iwobi has the ability, I think, to, you know, quick feet and play some of those quick passes and just break them down completely. And I'm kind of excited to see him let loose against him. And I think it might be an opportunity for Fulham to sort of let loose. And we saw it a little bit in the game against Spurs, which is a weird thing to say, but they were almost playing like there was no pressure on them. And those goals are flying in and the passing around the park. And again, as Kish sort of broke it down in the tactical breakdown he did, it's all down to Marco Silva's style of play and how he completely outmanaged Postecoglou. And I kind of expect that we'll be going into this Sheffield game in the same manner. And fortunately, there are so many examples. If you look back to that Arsenal game, you can see how easily they were broken down and where their weaknesses lie. And I don't think that's something that Sheffield can fix in a couple of weeks. I think it's a pretty gaping hole that they're struggling to actually... they just can't hack it in the Premier League this season. And look, it's nothing against Sheffield. We've been there as a Fulham side in the same position, getting torn apart by teams. It's part down to the manager, part down to the players he has available to him. But I think this should be a good result for Fulham. One thing to say here is we talk about, you know, Sheffield potentially having the shackles off. Having a quick look at Sheffield's upcoming fixtures, before the end of the season, they have to still play Liverpool, Chelsea, Man United, Newcastle, Spurs. They got 10 games left. That's 5 of those games. Fulham is actually a must-win for them, especially when you look at their next 3 is Fulham at home, then Liverpool away, and then Chelsea at home. Then they've got Brentford away. Admittedly, Brentford not in great form at the moment, but you'd expect Brentford to probably win that game. If they don't pick up points against Fulham, they probably won't pick up any points for the next couple of games after that, meaning they'll have six games left to, I'd say they're pretty much mathematically down at that point. With the point deductions in the league at the moment, you know, Forest down in the relegation zone, Everton might have some more points taken off them before the end of the season. You might only need 28, 30 points to survive this year, but it does mean you need to beat Fulham this weekend. And they would know that because they're realistically not going to get any upsets this season. I know they beat Luton. I don't know who their other two wins have been against this year, but it's got to be a game that they're looking at going, this is our pretty much our last chance. And I do wonder if that will play into their hands a little bit and maybe rev them up more than Fulham will be revved up for this game. Because is there a potential, Dad, I'll throw it to you, is there a potential that Fulham come into this game maybe with the foot off the pedal a little bit, knowing that Sheffield have been so poor this season?
No, I don't think so. I think that would be a schoolboy error that Marco Silva is never going to make. He, you know, he prepares well. And he's also, you know, up the back of those guys all the time. He's pretty relentless and he wants results. And I think he sets very, very short-term goals. Doesn't look too far ahead. I cannot see us going there. It may turn out that we lack intensity for whatever reason, but I cannot see us going there with those things not covered off. The other thing about what you're saying, and I think you're probably right if you stand back and analyze where they are and if this is a must-win game for them, I think that kind of plays into our hands because it's the opposite and the contra of what Skibby's saying he's rightfully concerned about, that they sit back just trying to defend and maybe get themselves through to the 50, 60-minute mark. We don't want that. We actually want them coming at us with less quality than we have and actually affording us space and opportunities on the counter, which I think we will, you know, we should do very well against them if that is the style of the game. So I'm not uncomfortable or anxious about this game as one might be for Fulham on the road. Yeah, I'm not.
More comfortable than normal anyway.
It's a nice place to be in, is going into a game not incredibly stressed on a weekend thinking, geez, are we going to be able to pull something off here? It's not pull something off. It's literally, can we just avoid a major Fulham-esque slip up? And look, I think we all are in agreement that yes is the answer. We should be able to avoid it, but that little demon's always going to be sitting in the back of our minds thinking, geez, please just get an early goal and just put all our minds at ease. Because I do think if we score in the first 20, 30 minutes of the game, it should be game over. And statistically, I think that this stat was sprouted in the commentary a couple of weeks ago that when Fulham have gone ahead, they haven't lost this season. It is something that we should be proud of, is the fact that we can go ahead and at least hold on at a bare minimum to a draw. I think when you go ahead against Sheffield United, they'd see the writing on the wall and we'd hopefully put them to the sword at that point, like we have done in recent weeks against Spurs and Man United as well. I've just pulled up here for those following along on the live stream a bit of a form comparison over the last 10. Fulham actually in blistering form at the moment, sitting sixth in the Premier League form table. 10 games, 5 wins, 2 draws, just the 3 losses. 17 goals scored, 10 goals against, a goal difference of plus 7 for 17 points. Sheffield United, on the other hand, sitting rock bottom. 10 games played, 1 win, 2 draws, 7 losses. 11 goals scored, so roughly 1 a game, 30 goals conceded. So an average scoreline for Sheffield United of a 3-1 loss with just the 5 points from those 10 games. It is dire times. And like I said before, we've been there. We know how it feels. And I do feel for any fans who go through that every season. It's kind of nice for us the last couple of years at least to not be worried about relegation battles or just be in that position where you are getting relegated. And I tell you what, I really do not miss that feeling of sitting down every weekend to watch the game and kind of knowing what's going to happen before you've even got there. Let's have a bit of a chat about potential lineups for this game, because I don't think we can really labour the point of who's potentially going to win this one. There's a bit of a question mark around Calvin Bassey after international break. He was sent home early from the Nigerian squad, apparently had a bit of an injury and sat on the bench for the first game. Do we feel like if Bassey is potentially got a bit of a niggle that he maybe gets rested for this game and we bring in Diop or Tim Ream, who played very well for the US in their Nations League, Nations Cup win against Mexico? Skibby, I'll throw to you first. Would you rest Bassey for this one and maybe save him for more important games coming up?
Yeah, I mean, if he is carrying an injury, then it's definitely not worth the risk against Sheffield United, especially a team where I think we've clearly outlined with the stats and everything that we discussed that they're not going to be too much of a goal threat, or they're not going to be attacking intensely, let's put it that way. So Bassey would just basically become more injured. But I think I think Tim Ream definitely has enough composure and enough quality to be able to still step in. So for me, I would happily rest Bassey if he's not feeling up to it, but I would only rest him if he wasn't feeling 100%. I think Marco has shown it very clearly this season or throughout his entire Fulham tenure that he doesn't like to change things up. So, and I like that. I prefer that. I think it's once you've got a momentum with the side, keep going. Like, there's no need to, if there's no need to change, then why change your winning formula? So I think only if there's a complete risk with Bassey, then Tim Ream would definitely be the one that steps in. I don't think it would be Diop. So I think he prefers that natural left footed or on the left side. So, but yeah, for me, if he's not up to it, then definitely change him out.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with that. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. My only caveat would be if there's any risk whatsoever, unless he is 100% fighting fit, I probably would rest him because he's too important. As much as I want him to be in the side, and I think he is such a hugely positive influence and he's so combative, I love him being there, and I'm sure Silva does as well, but I wouldn't risk him because I think Tim Ream can do an absolutely, absolutely fine and good job.
Yeah.
I'd agree. I think if there's any kind of possibility that Bassey has even a niggle, even if Bassey's at, you know, 85, 90%, I'd probably take it as an opportunity to give him a rest. And it basically gives him kind of 3 weeks leading in. Well, I mean, he'd probably play against Forest if he was 80%, let's say. But it gives him a little bit of extra time just to ease himself into it. And I think you said there, Dad, is I think he's just going to be too important for the run-in for the rest of the season. There's games where I think we really would benefit from having him play. If Tim Ream is in the team, I just feel like those little crunch moments where potentially you can get a win if you've got the right people out on the park. As much as Tim Ream is a legend and has done some great things, you can just see the difference between Bassey and Ream at the moment, where Bassey's just got that little bit of extra pace, that little bit of extra awareness, bit of extra strength, a bit of composure as well in his passing. It all just is adding up for Bassey at the moment is a really brilliant signing for Fulham. And I think we just kind of need to protect him and bubble wrap him a little bit. Same with, you know, Anthony Robinson potentially coming back. I don't know if you watched any of the final, but Robinson put in a huge shift. Mexico were just coming hard all night down the wing, and Robinson was under attack for the majority of it. I really feel like this could potentially even be an opportunity to rest Robinson and maybe have Balotore start on the left. Maybe even someone like De Fougerolles starts on the left after getting his first cap for Canada during the week. Maybe he's on a bit of a high at the moment and you can actually put him into the team and say, this is the kind of game where we can actually let you loose. Maybe there's opportunities for other youth players as well to come in. I feel like this is the kind of game that you can maybe see a few extra changes. looking further up the park, we've talked about it a fair bit. Lukic, Polina together in the middle. Are we in agreement that that is now the way forward, or do you think there's still the potential to make a few changes there?
Well, I think that's the dream team, isn't it? And it worked so beautifully against Spurs. I can't imagine Marco thinking anything else other than picking those two to start. Unless there's an injury or something.
Yeah, I think that they have to be the starting. I mean, you could start Kearney. You could start a more luxury centre mid if you wanted. But I think, again, it comes back to the making changes for changes' sake type thing. I know there's all this thing about, you know, squad rotation, and these are the kind of games where you could bring people in. But at the end of the day, we've still got something to play for. We're still chasing that eighth spot. And until we can't reach that, I wouldn't change and swap around. I think we should really go to Bramall Lane with our strongest 11, our fittest strongest 11, I should say, and really push for that win. I know that, you know, we could bring in Tom Kearney. You could, in theory, give Wilson another chance. He'll probably, he'll probably be a bit fragile after Wales crashed out of the Euros playoff yesterday. But it's sort of the kind of game where he would sort of grow into. But for me, I think we have to go in with kind of unchanged as much as possible, meaning Lukic would start with Polina, sort of Iwobi, Willian, Pereira, really take the game to them. And then, you know, if it's not going our way, then what amazing people we have to come off the bench. We've got Adama to come in, Wilson, Broya if he makes the bench, and Jimenez is back. I think it just has to be unchanged at this point, because until we can't reach eighth, I'm keeping my passport in hand and I'm ready for that European tour, you know?
I actually think for the, not man management, but for the career management step, I think Marco Silva is going to keep playing Lukic while he's hot. I'm sure of it.
I think it makes total sense. And I agree with Skibby as well that you go into this game with your strongest 11. I'd like to see the bench not packed out with youth, but I'd like to see some of the younger guys on the bench so that, yes, if we are 4-0 up at half time, you can throw Josh King on and give him his Premier League debut at 17 years old and let him have 20 minutes to run around and you, some of those other players as well who you could potentially call on and give some Premier League experience to. But I'd like us to be 4-0 up at that point. And we've seen it with Marco before, 3-0 up with 10 minutes to go, and you got some, I think Dibley Diaz was on the bench for one of those times, and can't remember the game, but we were 3-0 up, and he still didn't call on. I think he brought on Reed and Deckard over Reed, which is just a classic Marco substitution. Rather than risking throwing a couple of youth in there, it's all about getting the points under your belt. As much as I'd love to see a little bit of rotation, I can't see it happening, unfortunately. But at the same time, I think it does mean we're probably going to go into this game thinking that we're going to score as many goals as possible and really put Sheffield United to the sword. And I kind of think that's a good thing as well. I think that's what you kind of want for this stage of the season, to be sending a bit of message to the teams around you and just saying, you know, we're fighting right through to the very last fixture of the season to get as far up the Premier League as possible. And I think that's kind of what the fans want to see as well. I don't like it when clubs take their foot off and you start seeing them losing games towards the end of the season because it's one or two positions. I really want to see us push hard. We've got to play Brentford, Palace, I mean, Man City at home as our last home game of the season. I think that's an opportunity for us to potentially cause a massive upset, throw the league into disarray at that point, because you probably take the title away from Man City. And there's a lot to play for Fulham still. So a lot of winnable games. Yeah. I'm sure Silva has been communicating that back to the players as well. And, you know, we all did our little predictions. I think, Skibby, you haven't managed to do yours yet. I'll send that out to you and you can get harassed on social media for your predictions for the rest of the season. But we all sort of came up with Fulham finishing around eighth or ninth. And I don't think it's overly unrealistic, because a handful of wins from here on out gets us to a really decent points total. We're on 38 at the moment. We've still got a couple of not easy games as such, but games, the next couple with Sheffield United and Nottingham Forest, we probably should be winning. You look at Luton at the end of the season and potentially Brentford as well. It pick up 12 points there, and that takes us to 50 points already. Then it's just a handful of points in those other six to get to our highest ever points total. It's not out of the question, and I'm sure Marco, I know last season he was really pushing the guys to set some records. I think this season he's going to be in the same boat. Do you see any issue here with Fulham pushing hard, or do you think we have the potential to potentially get into those European spots?
Of course. I mean, we've got some winnable games coming up, as you mentioned, and I think the ones that are potentially troublesome on paper are Liverpool at home and West Ham away, you know, where they sit in the table. But they're still playing for other competitions. We're in the luxury where we're only playing for Premier League right now. So we just purely focused on and resting up for each game as it comes. Whereas, you know, we're playing West Ham in between, I think. Is it in between or is it just after their sort of European trip? Against Leverkusen.
Just after.
So, I mean, they're going to be pretty shattered after that. I mean, Liverpool is still in the Champions League as it stands. Europa League. So they've still got their eyes on the prize there. I know they've still got the title to go for, but they're going to be quite thin on the ground with their squad. I think even the ones on paper which seem hard are winnable. And I think that's a really good position to be in. And I think that's what Marco's got to be telling the guys, is that, you know, we've got some winnable games coming up with, you know, Sheffield United away, Nottingham Forest away. But even the troublesome games, definitely winnable. I mean, they're still active in those competitions. So why can't we? And hopefully that will spur them on to really push. And hopefully we can squeak that eighth place. But it's going to be tough. It's not going to be a given. And I think there is a lot of ifs in there. But absolutely, dream big. Why not?
That West Ham game as well, like you said, actually, it is in between the two. So they play Leverkusen away on the Thursday, then we play them Sunday afternoon, and then they have to go back to Leverkusen again on the next Thursday. So they're going to have a packed schedule. That game is, there's three other games to play before that. They're currently sitting in seventh and probably feeling pretty confident about their position. But it is so tight. We're only 6 points behind them. There's a high possibility that come that game, Fulham are maybe sitting ninth and West Ham might be sitting 10th or 11th. And all of a sudden, European qualification actually depends on them winning a European competition. So there's the potential that they all of a sudden say, actually, this game against Fulham isn't as important as this Leverkusen game anymore. We need to win this Leverkusen game and put everything into this game. And I think, as Steve Reynolds has said on our live stream as well, clubs are probably not relishing coming to the Cottage this season. Liverpool have been given a very good game by us twice this year. I think the City game is hard to really know how they feel, because they obviously got a bit of a fortunate decision early in the game, and it kind of threw the entire team at that point, and Fulham was still finding their feet at that point as well. But Man City, I'm sure, will look at Fulham with a fair bit of respect and go into the game not expecting to walk over us. And that's the kind of position that I, as a Fulham fan, want to be in as well, knowing that clubs will come to the Cottage and not expect to just walk over us and expect a decent game out of us.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I mean, to all of your points, there is no way in my mind that Marco is going to be taking his foot off the pedal. No way in the world. He's going all the way. And, you know, it's always nice if it's in your hands but it won't be. The results have to go our way, the other results. So a couple have to falter and we have to probably overachieve. But it feels doable. And I really like the fact that Liverpool and City have got to come to us. I really like that at that end of the season. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm. I think we can probably wrap up talking about Sheffield there, but there's a couple of other things I just wanted to touch on before we do. Firstly, as we're recording this, just before the podcast started, I got an email. I'm sure most people got the email about the Riverside development. Basically, it seems like a bit of a soft launch of the Riverside, as Fulham are calling it, which is, as they say, out of this world match day entertainment. Welcome to the Riverside. It's basically been released on their website. All of the new areas within the Riverside stand, so the Sky Deck, areas they're calling the Thames Bar Room, the Gourmet, the Originals, the Riverside Market, the Match Day Plus. Now, we don't have any information on pricing for these yet, but it, looking at this, it's not about football. It's interesting. They show some mock-ups of the Sky Deck, which is that sort of open-air bar at the very top of the stand. And I noticed that they've actually photoshopped out the light towers at Craven Cottage. So you kind of, it doesn't actually look like you're at a football stadium. And they're obviously not marketing it to people who are kind of interested in football. It's a VIP area more than anything. But Skibby, I mean, throwing to you as someone who goes to the cottage regularly, a season ticket holder, looking at the Riverside and knowing the price of those tickets for season tickets this year, and then now looking at the announcement and basically showing that the majority of the Riverside is pretty much corporate only, how does that make you feel as a fan when you see those prices of those season tickets going up every year on top of that?
It's disappointing, and I think it's just one of those where it's just got so old now. Like, I know we sort of got a lot of information about the Riverside and like a couple of years ago and what it's going to look like and all this stuff and what it's going to be, and I think I've just got tired of fighting it now. But it's exactly what you said. It's not for football fans, it's not for Fulham fans, it's not for us. I don't know why they're sending me all this information about this Riverside stand, which I'm never going to be able to afford to go to. I'm not really going to go to anyway because it's a bit too bougie for me. It's basically kind of going off the hype of the people in, you know, West Kensington and Chelsea, that kind of area, having a lot of money, wanting to be like an influencer type thing, and it's just going to be their place to go to be like, oh, I'm at the Riverside, and you know, selfies galore and all this stuff and Instagram it, and that's basically what they've kind of gone for. And then there's part of me which also thinks about the whole thing that Shahid Khan talked about, was wanting to make Fulham self-sustainable. So if we're able to help run the club and improve our revenue streams by ripping off a load of rich kids on Instagram, then I'm kind of for it in a little bit. But I think marketing to say, oh yeah, it'll be your elite match day experience. Do you know what would be my elite match day experience? Would be for me to take my future kids to football and watch a game and actually be able to afford to, you know? Basically, that's just not sustainable. That's not even a future that I see at the moment, you know, because I was, and this is a story, I guess, is that the only reason I got a season ticket this year was because the last couple of years I was a member, and yeah, fair enough, I paid 50 quid or whatever, or 100 quid or whatever it was to have the priority to buy a match ticket. But then when the priority actually came along, it was for £70 to £100 for a ticket. So I was like, well, I'm not paying that to go watch Fulham v Bournemouth. So to buy a season ticket, it then actually worked out that it was about £35, £40 a game. So it's much more sustainable from a financial point of view. But you're just losing out on that match day experience to be able to take a friend, or, you know, just sort of like, oh, do you fancy going to Fulham today? Yeah, no worries, sounds good. That would be the elite match day experience, where you actually win new fans rather than some kid who just cares about getting likes because they're watching a game in the most expensive stand in the football. It just doesn't interest me in the slightest. And I think it's not Fulham. It's not what the club is about. But at the end of the day, what can I do to change that? So he's putting his money in. He's given us a brand new stand. I love that. But yeah, it's almost like you take the good with the bad. And unfortunately, there's just a lot more bad that I can't really do anything about.
Call me greedy, call me unrealistic, but why can't we have a bit of both? Why can't we take all the money off the people who want to be on the top tier and the bar overlooking the river, and they can be doing whatever they want up there and getting all their Instagram likes and increasing their following and influence, but actually offset that against, well, use that to
subsidize season tickets effectively.
Yeah, subsidize season ticket holders for true fans. And I think that would win hearts and minds, because I think maybe there would be some people who'd be totally disinterested and very against what looks like happening in the Riverside Stand. But, you know, if those people aren't bothering anyone and they're a very, very small minority, that's fine. There's always been corporate entertainment at sport. And you go to a lot of cricket matches, no one's watching the cricket. You know, they're occupying the best boxes, whether it be AFL, you know, rugby, football, they're being wined and dined. And maybe some of them in those corporate boxes may be football fans, but they're just important people who need to be wined and dined. And there's always going to be that around sport, and I've got no problem with that. But for the 95% of the people who are actually fans who want to watch the game and bring their kids or bring their family, look after them. You know, it's just crazy. You can do both.
I mean, to your point, though, I do agree with the fact that, you know, why can't we have both? But I think the way that I felt that it's been marketed and the way that it's been sort of handled by sort of the execs is, look, this is a brand new stand for you guys and for your club. But now it's sort of turning that it was never built for us. And it's basically, yes, you can have small corporate boxes, fair enough. But then the top tier and then the bottom tier should then be for actual fans, like any other event. But the way that they're pricing those seats that I just mentioned, it's not for us. It's like a gift to themselves. Like, this is, we're making Fulham better by building this whole brand new stand, but it was never for us. And for the actual fan, it's never for us.
It's interesting as well, because, you know, the stand was built, and at the very start, it's all about how, you know, it's increasing the capacity of Craven Cottage by 3,500 seats. But when you actually look at the price of those seats and look at who those seats are now marketed to, it kind of reduces the capacity of Craven Cottage, because those seats are now not really available for actual fans of Fulham. Maybe for a handful of actual fans who can afford it and want to live that sort of life. But, I mean, you're actually not expanding the stadium for the people who kind of care about the club the most. And when you look at the marketing of the new stand in the website, and please do visit riverside.fulhamfc.com to have a look. It's all focused on entertainment. The word entertainment must be used 100 times in here. It's all about, you know, you can actually, it's saying, you know, you're able to book a VIP area and get appearances from Fulham legends. Is a great place to mix with business partners is one of the things it actually says. It says in the dugout, it's all about entertainment and being able to be pitch side and right behind the coaching staff and potentially get on screen. It's crazy. It's all about entertainment. And you sort of see that wrestling side of things coming in from the Tony Khan marketing gurus that he must have sitting in the background going, it's all about, we must entertain at all times. And it's not I mean, this stand shouldn't be solely about entertainment. I know there's an aspect to that when you have corporate boxes and corporate seating, but it should be for giving fans a really good experience on the day and experiences more than entertainment. I think they've missed the mark massively. And the other thing that I was going to mention as well is the fact that we're coming up to the 1st of April and Fulham actually are obliged by Premier League rules to release their financials for last season. So maybe we'll actually get a bit of a better understanding as to why ticket prices are the way they are, because we'll see the sort of finer details. And Dad, I'll throw to you here, because I started looking into the financials and then half handballed it to you because I couldn't understand most of it. Your thoughts on where Fulham stand over the last couple of years and how you potentially see the numbers that will come out in the next couple of days falling, and what knock-on effect you think that might have on ticket prices and the Riverside stand itself?
As if I would know.
Just a little question.
Yeah, I mean, how could I possibly know? I think if you're asking me where I think it's going to head, pretty much where it's come from, I think it's pretty clear where this is all going. You forced me to take more of an interest in the accounts, which I was kind of fairly not disinterested in, but I was busy doing something else, to be quite honest with you. But which then led into a discussion of, oh, explain this and explain that. So we did go through it. And I mean, the accounts are they're pretty high level summaries of what is actually going on. There's not a lot of detail. You know, the real meaty bits that you really want to see, which is basically one of the terms of these, the details of some of these player agreements, you're never going to see that. So your ability to actually truly work out what it means from an FFP or PSR perspective is pretty limited. And, you know, look, honestly, Jack, I have no idea what is likely to come out of these accounts or how the situation is likely to be dramatically changed. Look, the ones we were looking at from the year before, the big difference was that there was a championship year and a Premier League year in there. So obviously there's some big differences in numbers, broadcast revenues and things like that. But no, terrible question to me, Jack. I have utterly no idea. I will. I know that because I have the capacity to. I will be told to look at them, so I will be going over it, no doubt, whether I like it or not. But yeah.
I mean, I could throw in a little bit of info, I guess. It's just I when they announced the new financial fair play, I did some digging on, I think it was some Cottage Analytica. I think they did some stuff on basically our numbers and things, and very, very brief look over. I think with the new sustainability rules and all of that stuff, I think we had about 30 mil to play with, if I remember rightly, but that was a very much a broad guess. But it, from other people that I saw doing sort of similar kind of workings out, we were all kind of landing in the same sort of area. So it does seem very tight when you think of 30 million for a player, or for any kind of new player and wages, you're not looking at a lot of money there. So it might be a bit sort of squeaky bum, I think, is the correct term.
Yeah, I agree. And there's not a huge amount of clarity over a lot of the numbers, I find, when people not 100% sure where the Metro 50 million falls, if that falls into this period or the next period. You know, if we do end up selling Polina and picking up 50 mil, is that going to fall into the same period as the Metro money, giving us a bigger war chest to play with, or does it fall into the next period? So it's very hard to understand. You do need someone who kind of knows FFP and PSR like the back of their hand. But Dad, like you said, we will try and work out at least a good overview of the accounts when they do get released to try and hopefully explain it in simple terms. And I know there's a few people on Twitter who do a very good job of looking into it quite deeply. And I'm just hopeful that there's a bit of an uptrend, because I think it's been a lot of years now of poor performances when you look at a profit and loss for us. And I think someone did the maths and basically looked, and if we do move to this new format, Fulham, I think 9 of the last 10 years would have failed, and that's that will lead to point deductions. And we've seen now the Premier League aren't afraid to deduct points for failure to comply. So it does mean that there's a lot more riding on those numbers than I think has been previously. It's always interesting when they drop, but now it feels a little bit more kind of real that if the numbers aren't good, you can lose points and potentially put seasons in jeopardy going forward. So I hope that there's going to be a lot more light shone on them and a lot more analysis. And maybe we do have people like Cottage Analytica come back for a little period just to go through the numbers and help us all understand them a little bit better and understand where we sit with FFP and PSR. do keep an eye out, because we will try and analyze them and put something out on Twitter and potentially talk about them in a future podcast as well. But guys, I think we can probably wrap this one up today. Managed to somehow squeeze an hour out of talking about Sheffield United, which I never expected. But there's always a way we can do it. So, Skibby, thank you so much for joining us on in your car, sitting in the car park. Hoping you're going to get yourself a treat after this.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's calling my name, so I'm ready for it. But no, thanks for having me, and always a pleasure to talk with you guys. So, all good.
Thanks very much, mate. And Dad, thanks for joining tonight.
Yep, thank you. Looking forward to the weekend. You didn't ask me for a prediction, but I'm going 4-0, another brace for Mooney's.
Are we meant to put money on that?
Oh, I couldn't possibly confirm or deny.
The return of Jack's top tip. He's been moved to Elton's top tip now, because you actually win. thank you, everyone who's followed along the live stream. Thank you to everyone who's listened along to our recent squad reviews as well. We've got the final installment of that coming up in the next few days. And as always, come on, you Whites.